Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. In this episode, I'll analyze an article made by the Western media about the war, and also answer some questions which have been piling up in my email. Since you know, I do answer questions on Twitter, but there's also some things coming on the email that, really, you know, I have to get to those as well at some point. And, well, about the news, yeah, it's Saturday as I'm recording this, it's Saturday evening, and as far as we know, Ukraine has reconquered a tiny village near Zhumovka and near Severny Donetsk. Otherwise, not much has been happening because we're moving into the positional fights. First things first, though, is that why is this happening is also important. For starters, well, recently there was news in the Russian news media, and probably didn't get mentioned abroad by kind of, you know, in general, propagandists that, well, because of a random fire, a munition stockpile has exploded and stuff. Well, it turns out that I didn't pay much attention to this because that's yet another munition stockpile that has been blown up and it still is exploding just outside Ukrainian borders. However, turns out that this was the Luhansk Armed Forces stockpile of artillery shells, which is still detonating. I found out about this from, you know, getting some info on reading on my pro-Russian sources. But the trick is that, well, as I mentioned in the last episode, and this also answers a question of one of my listeners, that, yeah, the Russian forces are fighting in this war as a sort of a messed up, meshed together, randomly cobbled soup. Regular army, contractors, the separatists, Chechens, even there are private military companies, all this stuff, you know. And they have separate command structures and separate ammo piles and all this stuff. Well, it turns out that the ammo stockpile that blasted off was the one of the Luhansk Donetsk artillery, which is the artillery that is shelling the Ukrainian forces the most. Namely, by using drones smartly and by focusing artillery fire, the Ukrainians could basically, at the very least, massively damage the Russian offense. But that's the only actually really hardcore military event that's been happening lately. What's more interesting is that if you again turn to some sort of a meta position of all this war and everything, well then, recently on, I guess it was CNN, I think it was CNN really, on American news site, because again, I've forgotten those because I read so much of all the articles all the time, but I'm pretty sure this was CNN. And they posted an article stating that right now we're witnessing one of the key moments of the whole war, that this might turn around, that this could be one of those moments of the war where, well, the fate of everything is decided. You know, one of those key moments and everything. But the problem was, which I kind of wanted to talk about, is the problem was that a lot of information was incorrect or maybe misleading. Because, well, Zelensky himself stated that Ukraine loses about 100 men per day killed. And recently, after all these Western leaders' statements that they won't be delivering weapons to Ukraine and all that stuff, well, one of his advisors came out and said that the losses are much bigger, about 200 to 500 lost per day. However, the accurate statement here would be that, well, he might be referring to the wounded, or he might be exaggerating the numbers, or not speaking plainly and fairly enough, because, you know, if the West cares, then Ukraine wins. If West doesn't care, Ukraine will probably lose because of sheer numerical advantage. I mean, all these misadvantages and all these failures of Russian army are there that they harm the Russian army, but you have to remember that, well, the Russian army is so huge, and it was, on paper at least, so strong that all this corruption and all these failures and everything, it just make it about on par with the Ukrainian one. It doesn't make it a laughable laughing stock that can be rolled over, no. It just means that they can't advance properly, they can't finish their operational goals, all this stuff. Well, as it turns out that, well, in this CNN article, it was stated that apparently Ukraine has lost about 30% of its army. And approximately the same numbers were given for Russia. Now the question is, are they talking about the army as a whole? Or just the manpower or everything? As it turns out, they were talking about the vehicles. Because it wasn't, like, you know, stated really, but we have documentation and evidence that about 30% of Ukraine's tanks have been lost, and the same number goes for Russia, except Ukraine's tanks get, you know, replenished by allies, while Russian tanks are just lost. This wasn't specified in the article. Also, the whole losses situation is weird because officially, according to Russian numbers, only 1,345 people have been killed in this so-called special military operation. Although we know the numbers are much larger, since those numbers that Russia presents, they hadn't been updated since March. But the important part is that we basically have to calculate these numbers, and, you know, casualties also include the wounded. And the fact that Ukraine is losing way less men than Russia isn't because, you know, rockets kill less Ukrainians than Russians, at least, sorry, harm. It's just the fact that every wounded person doesn't turn into a dead person. The thing is that there are also two types of casualties, those that will go to hospital and then maybe come back to the battlefield, and those that certainly won't. Now, the problem with all this is that Ukrainians die as much as the Russians do, except Russians haven't mobilized, while Ukraine has, and all that stuff, since Ukraine's pushing it to its own limit, while Russia is just, you know, still playing around and isn't showing any attention of actually trying to win the war. And they're having massive problems and all these compounding issues. However, the biggest killer here is the fact that the corruption has seeped in into Russian, well, medical supplies and all their military equipment. Which means that, for instance, one-third of all the wounded on the Russian side will die. Meanwhile, only one-fifth of all the wounded on the Ukrainian side will die. The losses and the discrepancy comes basically from these numbers. The fact that Ukrainians have access to better medical care, which basically means that, yeah, they might get concussed and they might get some, you know, flesh wounds. Meanwhile, at the same time, you know, those flesh wounds will get treated on the Ukrainian side, won't get treated on the Russian side, which is why those losses are what they are. But continuing on, the article that I read, which is why I wanted to comment on this, stated that there are three outcomes on this war. Which is where they showed that incompetence, really. Because they stated that the first outcome is that Russia manages to push out Ukraine from Donetsk and Lugansk, and therefore can use this ground to stage more attacks and, you know, uses as preparing ground and all this stuff. Second one was that the war would last for years, and that basically it would turn into a stalemate. And the final one was that all Russian forces would just, you know, sort of retreat to the previous territories and all that stuff, and Russia would just come up and declare this a victory. These were all presented as equal opportunity, kind of equal chance options that could happen right now. But I can just comment on this because, well, none of these options are satisfactory, really. For one, the article presumes that if Russia manages to push through and capture Donetsk and Lugansk, that Ukrainians won't fight anymore, that the war will be over. The problem is, Ukrainians want to win this war, not just give up or lose ground and all this stuff. And to answer a question from my email, again, tying all these in, why is Ukraine bombarding Donetsk as a city? Well, for one, it's because of Western leaders. See, if you were Ukrainian leadership and West would tell you to basically, no, just we're having some economic difficulties, our oil prices might go up or our gas prices might go up, you have to abandon this territory. Well, I've mentioned this before, but it just makes sense that if the West, your allies, your supporters, are pushing you to basically lose some ground, and you're going to give this ground away to the enemy, and that's in your strategy, and you have to present it somehow, well, you have to present it to your own people who want you to win this war and push through. And if there's something left standing there, much harder to push through politically the fact that you have to leave basically a city with infrastructure and all this stuff rather than a burnt piece of ground. So it just makes sense. As long as the West is going to push for Ukraine to abandon their own lands, well, the more Ukraine is going to demolish those lands as much as they can. Because, well, one, if you're going to give them away to the enemy, you want to make the prize less sweet. And secondly, well, you know, easier also to explain to your own people. But I don't think this is going to happen ever, because it makes no sense to me, you know. It's kind of like telling France that, oh no, you know what, Alsace-Lorraine, that's just German land, just give it up and don't fight. Same thing. These whole, oh, Ukraine should just give up territory to kind of end the war quickly, those things just appall me. Those things are just something that I can't really think about. Which is why, even if Russia comes and, like, you know, conquers all of Donetsk and Luhansk, like, do you think Ukraine's going to stop shelling those places? Do you think something's going to stop? That doesn't end the war in any way or form. The war's not going to end until one side is totally broken. This is not that kind of war. Second option, stalemate for years. Yeah, that could happen, probably Afghanistan, but that would irritate a lot of people in Russia, and that would lead to a massive attrition losses, and while Ukrainian side is, well, basically morally ready to accept losses because it's their war of independence, basically, and their war of survival, the Russian side might not be so likely to accept tons of losses lasting for a lot of years, and this could really kind of encourage Russia's collapse. Which is why mobilization hasn't been announced, since, well, Russia knows that they'd be at a disadvantage if this goes on for years. Which could be a good thing for us, but, well, I don't think this will last for years, because this lasting for years is such a disadvantage for the Russian side that they'll do anything. They'll have to gamble, even if it means losing the war, but it gives them an odds to basically win it somehow. Like, if this goes on for years, the Russian side automatically loses, which is why they'll just gamble everything and anything, and they'll just do some crazy shenanigans, failure of which will just cost them the war. But they know if this lasts for years, then they lost already, and that there's no point. So, that's not going to happen. And finally, Putin declaring this a win? Well, he could have, at some point. But there's this thing called propaganda, and what Russia has been saying all this time. And it's been saying that Ukraine is the devil, that we're all Nazis, including all of us Westerners. And I'm just putting myself in the same basket as you, even though I live in Laffy, and I'm probably way more Eastern than any one of you. But, yeah, he's turned this into a war where he just can't declare getting minor land gains as a victory and just get off scot-free. Because he's raged the levels of importance of this war and this ideological background of all this situation such an insane level that Putin will lose power. And all this is going to go haywire completely, because this is the point where, you know, he can choose to ignore reality, but reality won't ignore him. And, like, even if there were, you know, some peace talks, even those will be looked at very, very badly and poorly. I mean, even when people came together in Turkey and discussed these possible peace negotiations and all this retreat, that already looked really, really bad. I mean, in Moscow, they're trying to kind of roll back the propaganda already by, you know, there were complaints that a lot of Z posters and V posters are being removed since, yeah, it's kind of hard to, on the fourth month of all this situation going on, kind of hard to sell it to average Russian about all the situation, how this is all going perfectly. And therefore, none of the scenarios that I've, that have been postulated by CNN, I think it was CNN, I'm pretty sure about that, are realistic, and they just kind of show this inability of any of these journalists or so-called experts there to even speak Russian or understand what's Russia about. It's kind of fuzzy and weird, because it seems like this article, which was kind of very spread out and popular in the Western media, was written by the same people who yell at me and call me, you know, just because you live in Laffy and speak Russian and have been to Russia and have dealt with all these issues doesn't make you an expert kind of people. It's kind of the same thing where, you know, I'm telling you what I know about, and then I'm being told that just because you are so close and are well informed doesn't make you an expert, because look, I read this in a book, and theoretically on paper, if you apply Western logics to this and all these rules and everything and regulations that the Russia totally must abide by, because they think logically and think what's best for their nation, except they don't, all this stuff, it's all like Asterix is everywhere. So the thing is, this is Russia we're talking about, and I don't even know what Putin thinks about, because in his recent economical forum, which I mentioned last episode, Putin kind of showed well enough that he's a tactical thinker, not a strategic one. So all of you who read this article and were kind of panicking or hoping for a good result, yeah, I don't know what the result of this war is going to be, because Russia collapsing is also a major issue and it's not good. But putting your hopes at a CNN article, which looks nice on paper and makes sense for Western audiences, let me assure you, it does not reflect realities in any way or form. And also, well, as, you know, these were the main questions that all of you have asked me lately, and I'll get to historical episodes too as well. Yeah, I hope this helps. We'll get to more news episodes when Igor Girkin releases something and when something actually changes. My arm's ready, and I'm pretty willing to go to Ukraine myself back again in early July. In August, I'll be in the United States for 2 weeks. I'll be in the East Coast. Hope to meet you there. But, yeah, lots of work in front of us. At any rate, please consider becoming our patron on patreon.com/theeasternborder. Or, you know, you can click the little monetary icon if you go and follow us on Twitter on @eastern_border. Or you can just listen to the show on theeasternborder.lv. You skip the ads that way, by the way. I mean, you can just hear the show, no ads. And you can, like, give us a one-time payment in PayPal as well if you want from there, or become our patron. But all in all, remember that happiness is mandatory. And whenever you want me to comment on a Western article by asking tons of questions about it next time, please make sure that you've listened to previous episodes before, because to veteran listeners of the show, well, hearing me laugh about another so-called Western expert mentioning his weird opinions, yeah. I'd rather not make episodes about comments on other journalist stuff, since I have my own work to do. До свидания, товарищ. Oh, and of course, happiness is mandatory.